But there's quite a bit to think about, and the Rambam says that this Mishnah is ra'oi le Rabbi Akiva, that the concepts here are so immense, the concepts are so profound, that it's ra'oi to Rabbi Akiva. And the Rambam held Rabbi Akiva in very great esteem. Hakol tzafoi, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has omniscience, he sees everything that goes on, Ben Begaloi, Ben Bechadri Chadarim, but also is capable, as the Rambam says, of knowing with perfect knowledge everything that will take place, and yet, somehow, in a way that defies our understanding, by Rishus Nesuna, that there is Bechira Chafshis, that there is free will. This, for the Rambam, is what he calls the Ikar Hagadol, Shakol Ataleibo, Amur HaTorah VeHaMitzvah. Everything depends on free will. The Rambam begins to address this topic of the conflict between foreknowledge and free will and the Yad HaChazaka, and he acknowledges that he can't really fully explicate the problem, and he says that the dilemma stems from the fact that God and his knowledge are inseparable in a way that's very different from human beings. I'm an organism, and I happen to, I hope, know a few things, not much, but when it comes to God, God and his knowledge are inseparable. So the Rambam says that's the core of the problem. We can't understand God, Kilo Yirani Adam V'chai, so we only know how his knowledge works. So the Ravid goes ballistic, as we know, and the Ravid says, why is he raising problems for us that he can't solve? And the Ravid seems to say something along the lines that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, knows the future, but only in the sense of algorithms, that, that there, these are the many different possibilities that may eventuate, but, God can certainly tell, that if I do A, it's going to lead to B, or if I do B, it's going to lead to C, if I do D, it's going to lead to E, and he knows all the possibilities. In that sense, God knows everything, but not necessarily in terms of how it's going to play out. And then the Ravid sort of throws up his hands and says, this isn't a great answer either, and it's all the Rambam's fault for bringing up the subject anyway. But be that as it may, the Rambam insisted, and others didn't, the Rambam insisted that even if we couldn't understand it, we had to completely commit ourselves to the doctrine of Bechira Chafshis. So Chasdei Kreskes wasn't so sure in one direction in terms of Bechira. There were elements of determinism in his thought. And then from the other standpoint, the Ralbag very famously says, no, you can't challenge Bechira, but you can certainly challenge the idea of divine omniscience, right? And he didn't think that God knew the future. He wasn't even sure if Kadosh Baruch Hu understood details. There's a wonderful article about this that was written by the person who was the Rav of my shul when I was in high school, a wonderful relationship with him and a great inspiration, Rabbi Dr. Michael Stridman. He called it Radical Theology in Defense of the Faith. I remember reading it in college. And again, it's all about the Ralbag's, attempt to resolve this dilemma. But that's not even really what I wanted to talk about. So, Metuva Olam Nidon, that the HaKadosh Baruch Hu judges the world, both fairly, but also sort of slanted towards Chesed, or Rachamim, what I call, grandparently counting. Not parents counting, grandparent counting. It's a different kind of math. If a parent says, you have to be in bed in 2 minutes, it's 2 minutes. If a grandparent says 2 minutes and it's 9 minutes, so it counts as 2 minutes. So there's something to be said for that. V'akol v'fi rov ha'masa. And this is really the chiddush atzum of the Rambam on this Mishnah. So the Rambam says the way that he thinks that this Mishnah should be interpreted, Rov HaMasa, that all is determined by the abundance of action. Meaning, the Rambam gives the following analogy. And I don't think this point is obvious at all. He says, let's say you could have a person who would give a $1,000 check to tzedakah, and you could have another person give a dollar 1,000 times. So you might say that these are equal. Or you might say, I don't know, it's better to give somebody $1,000. Especially Shitas HaRambam, because that way they might be able to, get a car, get a job. The Rambam says the opposite. Hakol lefi rov hamas says it's much better, at least for moral development, to give $1 1,000 times, right? Because he says, and this is the Shitasa with the comment that he makes in Hilchos Deos, when he talks about what it means to develop the right virtues, and he says the real idea is to do things over and over and over again to habituate yourself to that process. So the idea of giving a dollar every day for 1,000 straight days, the Rambam thought was much better in terms of internalizing the midas hanedivos, generosity, than it would be to give $1,000, a significant sum of money, at once. So this, if and again, this appears to be the view of the Rambam, and It's not clear that, you know, everybody would agree to this, but that obviously has many, you know, implications educationally. You know, like one of the things that I've thought about for a long time is the success of the Daf Yomi program. There's other reasons for this, like, you know, the development of the Schottenstein and, you know, the advent at the right time of different technologies like, you know, WhatsApp and these apps that you can listen to. And it's really, you know, there's a convergence of factors that it's made it very, you know, popular. But one of the things that I think about is in terms of the Rambam's assessment of Rov HaMaaseh, you know, of people, you know, getting into this routine and habituating it, you really see how this plays out across different tchumin and avodat Hashem. So it could be something to think about educationally, where, you know, maybe one of the things that we want to try to educate towards is these like small, discrete, but repeatable actions that are then internalized, whether it's in terms of tzedakah, as the Rambam says, or I'm suggesting, you know, part of the success of the Daf Yomi program is allowed people to sort of make it part of their, you know, routine. So this is, I think, something, you know, to really consider in educational context is to what extent can we build these things into the system. I'll just conclude with something I remember hearing on NPR years ago, which really I thought was very fascinating. Somebody had done some research to improve, like everything else in public schools, they were looking to improve test scores because they would get better funding. You know, so it was mitoch shalolishma, but it really was balishma. So they found out that if you had the kids think for 10 minutes a day about Hakaras HaTov, about gratitude. They call them gratitude protocols. So it makes the kids more focused in general. They're happier in school, and then they start performing better in school. So the number of charter schools in New York City adopted gratitude protocols on a daily basis. So they found that at the beginning, of course, it was a struggle. And then, you know, it got part of the routine. And then the kids started reporting it's the favorite part of their day, and they studied this, and it was copied all over the country. So they have in the charter school movement these gratitude protocols, because Hakol Afi Rov HaMaaseh, when something is repeatable, even though it's a relatively trivial amount of time, it's like 5 or 10 minutes a day, they found that it had an actually measurable material impact on the performance of these students. I mean, again, affirming the doctrine of the Rambam, that small repeatable acts may be preferable to large, singular, Maisim Tovim.